From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Yep. Get ready, everybody. It's going to be a big 3 hours, a lot of moving parts today, and I'm more than happy to do it. The president's going to be at the Villages. Why would he do that? Because he's got another proactive way to help people with their 401k. He's thinking about their retirement, but not just helping you with Trump accounts when you're born, but helping you get some financial literacy with the Secretary of Treasury, big financial literacy series of courses, which is amazing, because I don't care if you're an accountant or an actor, there's no way you don't benefit from being competent. Even if you have a financial planner, you want to know what he or she is doing for you. So the president's got a big announcement today at the Villages, perfect place to do it. And then we'll be following all the other breaking news because we've got some legislation that was on the president's desk to actually sign the DHS, funding everything except Border Patrol and everything except Border Patrol and ICE. But they got an answer for that, too. Let's go to the big three.
Number three.
All the evidence that I've seen, the suspect shot our officer point blank range with a shotgun. Our officer heroically returned fire while being shot point blank range in the chest with a shotgun and was able to get off five shots.
Secret Service Director talking about what happened at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, what we now know about the shooting, and how the shooter was taken down. Many questions answered, others still need to be defined.
Number two.
This will relieve pressure from the Department of Homeland Security. We were not going to have lines at TSA. Everybody will get their paychecks now. We'll get moving forward. And then we will finish the work.
That is the Speaker of the House. The guy's got endless patience. It's over. DHS is completely funded by June. As the Democratic led shutdown ends and a bad precedent of picking and choosing what you will finance and not finance in a department is now officially part of the game. And Republicans, I'm sure, will do it, too. And I think it's just bad for us, meaning Americans. This is a win for the Speaker, though. Don't let anyone kid you.
Number one.
He's not going to make a bad deal himself. So we have a stalemate here. They own the Straits of Hormuz, and we have shut down all their exports with the blockade. So we could continue that, and because the blockade is definitely effective.
That is General Keane. Here we go. Supreme leader vows to fight on and hold out in Iran as Trump gets briefed on his return for and different war options. I think Trump will go back into battle. I really do. Why? The economic sanctions are working tremendously. The cracking down on cryptocurrency has been phenomenal. Stopping the ghost ships and the ghost fleet that have been eluding sanctions has been great. And they stopped 44 ships from leaving the Strait of Hormuz. And others are going through 10 to 15 ships a day. We need like, I don't know what they say, close to 100. But it shows some movement there. But I just think the Iranian leaders have the guns and they're going to feed themselves. I love that the UAE and all the other Gulf states are being urged to freeze the funds of the Iranians. Their horrible economy, their horrible banking system. They don't want to keep their fortunes in that. Why would they? So the UAE is leading the charge. UAE should be the 51st state. I mean, forget about Canada. That should be the 51st state. But on Capitol Hill yesterday, they were talking about what they need. Cut three is General Keane.
General Keane, there's no question that Vladimir Putin's Russia is taking serious action to undermine our efforts for success in Iran. Is there any question about that?
There's definitely some action there.
Yeah. I don't know. The one thing with the president that I just don't get is how he doesn't. I know it doesn't work just to say the terrible person, terrible person, terrible person, because he needs to talk to him. But the Russians, Vladimir Putin just talked to the president of the United States. He's providing intelligence operations. So the Iranians know exactly who's at our bases and where to hit. And General Keane says, I'll tell you in a private setting. That means I'll give you details. So it just boggles my mind. Am I surprised? No. I mean, were we supplying the Mujahideen with weapons to make sure the Soviet Union stay in Afghanistan was horrendous? Yes. In Vietnam, were they providing weapons to North Korea and everything else to North Korea? Yes. Are we trying to push them back wherever they go? Yes. Are we arming the Ukrainians? Yes. So we are on opposite sides. But what they got to know is you're not going to be able to get, if you give intelligence to the Iranians, don't expect me to sit there and broker peace between you and the Ukrainians. In fact, you keep this up. Instead of $400 million that the NATO is buying from us and giving to the Ukrainians, how about I sell $800 billion, I should say. So here's what the president's got to challenge with the Iranians. Now try to follow this. The hardliner is this Major General Ahmed Fahidi. He appears to be dominating. Why? Because he's the only one supposedly leading, if I'm to believe it, the supreme leader's alive, with Khamenei's son. So he's in charge. So together, they're coming off extremely hard line. Well, who's he teaming with? The foreign minister. Foreign minister teaming with the IRGC leader. All right, that's the power broker. No, it's not. The parliamentary speaker, Gobolov, and the president, Pashokian, are reportedly upset that the foreign minister is combining with the IRGC commander because they have a different tone. They want to do a deal and get the economy off its back. And the other guys don't care at all. So if I'm Trump, who am I talking to? Cut one.
I don't know what stubborn is because really nobody knows what the talks are except myself and a couple of other people. They want to make a deal badly. We have a problem because nobody knows for sure who the leaders are. It's a little bit of a problem, you know. The leaders have been wiped out along with their military, almost all of their military. I mean, think of it. 159 ships was their total Navy. 159 ships are gone. They're underwater. They're way below sea level.
So there you go. That is true. But they do have a mosquito navy, and that's the problem. That's what's keeping the strait closed and insurers upset. They're like Boston Whalers. How do you stop that? I mean, they could be bombs. There's also drone boats that we got to worry about. So that's the issue. The big ships have been destroyed. That's not a surprise. The Air Force has been destroyed. That's not a surprise. The mosquito navy, the ballistic missiles. And speaking of missiles, we have our hypersonic weapon, the Dark Eagle, has been brought to the Middle East. We don't have that many, but we have enough, and we got to get it to certain places like Pickaxe, where a nuclear plant, a weapons plant, is being built, but it's so deep in a mountain, we have trouble with even our bunker busters getting to it. There's a belief that the hypersonic weapons could do that. I believe we have few options. What are those options? General Jack Keane, founder of the Institute for Study of War, which I thoroughly recommend you look at. Cut 11.
What do we do about the Straits of Hormuz? We can't leave them in Iranians' hands. They believe now they own it. We have to militarily force that to be cleared and secured and open. And we have the military capability to do that. Another option, what do we do about Karg Island? Karg Island is blocked right now by our blockade. An option, when we finish military operations or maybe even start with military operations, it's an option the president has, certainly, and likely was discussed, we could destroy it. And that would force an eventual economic collapse of the regime. There's no doubt about that. They don't have much alternatives right. Because literally 80% of their revenue comes from that distribution of oil itself right out of that one place.
So that is breaking it down. That's our options. And what I've been told, too, is every CENTCOM commander for the last 40-plus years has looked at an Iranian battle plan and been frustrated as they've been allowed to harass, take hostages, commit terrorism, have sponsored terrorism. And there's been a frustration. That's why if you see McKenzie, former CENTCOM commander, if you see General Petraeus, it doesn't matter if they voted for Trump or not. When it comes to this, they have trouble going against, number one, the military, which has performed magnificently. And number two, saying that the war is a war of choice. You know it's not a war of choice. A choice to attack an enemy that declared an enemy of us. And Ayatollah Khomeini, thankfully dead, said, "Death to America is not a slogan, it's a policy." I also want to bring this up, too. Yesterday, DHS got funded. Finally, we don't have to worry about the TSA guys. We don't have to worry about the back office. We don't have to worry about air traffic controllers. We know they're going to be funded. Now, what about Border Patrol and ICE? They're going to get funded in a reconciliation package certain to pass June 1st or the first week in June. My problem is the precedent it sets. DHS was funded. ICE has a series of incidents. Two people died in Minneapolis. They decide they don't want to fund ICE. They want concessions and changes. They actually got some, but I don't want to detract from it. Bottom line is they said, if you don't do that, I'll fund DHS. I'm just not going to fund the Border Patrol and ICE. What? What are you talking about? You can't just pick and choose what portion of a division that you're going to fund. Are you, I'm going to fund the Department of Energy, but nothing to do with refiners. I don't want to pay for refineries. Of course you got to pay for refineries. So Chip Roy says, look, I didn't want to sign off on this. I want to sign off on the border and ICE together. They're great people doing a great, important job. I don't want to be a part of allowing them not to be funded, even though there's a backstop of a reconciliation package. But the precedent is real. Cut 19.
There's one thing that's perfectly clear. Republicans have funded ICE and Border Patrol. Democrats haven't. And by the way, what we did yesterday was we moved the budget resolution, which, look, there's no secret. I've been public about saying I don't think we should be isolating ICE and Border Patrol, but it's Democrats that refuse to do it. It's Republicans that are figuring out a way to get them funded so the American people can be safe. And I'm not going to criticize our leadership for trying to make sure they're funded. That's the right thing to do.
So he went on to talk about the president. I want to take a break to not take too much time away from my next guest, but I'll add this. Chip Roy does it right. He's passionate. He's well-researched. He knows what he believes. But he's there to get things done. He's got to do what's possible. You got to do what's possible. Work hard. Go try to negotiate. Use all your skills. Get a strategy together. Combine with people. Go across party lines when necessary. But in the end, get something done. Going home and not doing anything is not okay. And Chip Roy gets that. He doesn't sacrifice his integrity. He's a lawmaker. He's not a think tank participant like Rand Paul and Tom Massey. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Back in a moment.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back, and running for governor on the Republican side is Perry Johnson. He's a self-made businessman. He is a problem solver. That's how he bills himself. That's what business people do, though, who spent decades helping companies cut waste, improve quality, and compete. In the 80s, the Japanese he went on to say, were beating us everywhere. Remember, that was the number one enemy when George H.W. Bush was president, was killing us in the auto industry. Then Perry stepped in, writing a book on the quality controls that helped bring the American auto industry back from the brink. And part of the reason why the Japanese were beating us, they were making better cars. Perry Johnson joins us now. Perry, why would you want to get into this? Why would you take your sterling reputation and go into politics?
I guess you have to be nuts.
So what do you think you could do in Michigan? What do you think you can get done?
Well, I've spent my entire life bringing efficiency and quality to companies. That's what I do. In fact, Perry Johnson Registrars, Perry Johnson Laboratory Accreditation, Perry Johnson Food Safety operate all over the world in 67 countries, and we're the largest ISO 9000 registrar in the country. I really love this state, and we have the most reckless spending operation maybe in the entire country. We think we can eclipse California in the way we waste
really?
Money.
Really? You think your fraud yes. could be as bad as California?
So what's that?
You think your fraud is as bad as California?
Well, I cannot attest to the amount of fraud. I can attest to the fact that our spending is way out there. Now, we do know that there probably is a lot of fraud. It's very difficult to identify without having some kind of audit. That's why I suggested my Michigan efficiency government audit, because we do things that are so stupid, it's beyond belief. In Michigan, for example, if we have somebody that comes into the state that applies for alien status because of the fact that they want to apply for these benefits, we automatically give them $500 a month for their housing. You can apply for food. And in fact, we had somebody anonymously apply with the governor's address, and they automatically got approved for food. We give all these benefits to the illegals that come in. We have a program, for example, that allows children automatically to get these RX benefits. they'd automatically get $1,500 plus $500 a month, so that's $7,500.
Right.
We spent about $1 billion a year to try to improve the quality of education, reading and writing for kids that are fourth grade and under. And we were sixth in the country when Gretchen took office, and now we're 44th in the country. We end up spending money in such ludicrous ways. We spend somewhere around $1 billion to try to increase the speed of the Amtrak train by 10%, and we didn't even succeed. In 1 year alone, we overpaid Medicaid and Medicare to the tune of $11 billion. Well, I want to eliminate the state income tax, reform the property tax, and the only way we can do that without having to raise other taxes is to become more efficient. And I'd like people to keep their money.
So how about this? So Perry, when's your primary? When's your primary?
I want to do it for the state.
When's your primary?
The primary is August 4th.
Wow.
That means we start
start
voting absentee probably the end of June.
So do you think that your state is looking for a Republican now? It's very much a battleground state. Trump put it in play, right?
He definitely. And we have a situation where we have Jocelyn Benson running. She'll probably be the Democratic nominee. And keep in mind, she was the person that was on the board of the Southern Poverty Law Center, which just had 11 indictments brought down by the federal grand jury because they were giving money to these organizations. We have all sorts of organizations.
In fact, she says, Jocelyn Benson says she's very proud to have been on the board of the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Yes. And not only that, think of this. She's on the board of this organization that gives money to all of these organizations. You know, they're among the Ku Klux Klan and all of that. And they're making this big push because their main focus is against these white extremists.
Yes.
And yet they're giving money to these white extremists.
And she's proud of it.
I mean, how absurd can you be?
So Perry, what are you going to do about the growing Muslim population that seems to tends to maybe see eye to eye with the Hassan Pikers of the world?
Well, it can be very frightening. When you take a look at what's going on, we, I think, have the largest concentration of the Muslim population in Dearborn. And we have to see what we can do to make sure that we bring the quality and the concept of fairness in play here.
I want you to hear from Governor Whitmer. Before we go, I want you to hear from Governor Whitmer. Listen to this on Trump.
The unpredictability, the instability, the putting our allies at arm's length has come with a big cost. And say that we're in worse shape than we were in 14 months ago.
10 to 20 seconds. You think so?
Definitely not. Aren't you happy that we have him in place now? Would you rather be in a position where we just go on and let Iran develop nuclear weapons at will? Can you imagine the position we would be in right now?
Let alone our economy.
Just let that go.
And we'd have no oil left in our strategic oil reserve either. And we'd have a lot of electric cars that nobody wanted.
Not only that, you have to have a strong president.
Perry Johnson, thanks so much. Best of luck.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
If you want perpetually high gas prices and a world in chaos, let Iran get back in the game. Let them survive with their nuclear ambitions intact. That's unacceptable. To my Democratic colleagues, I've pretty much had it with the idea that Iran is not a threat to the world.
That is Lindsey Graham, but you know that. And he's talking about after the hearings yesterday with armed services, when they went after Pete and said, we're losing the war. Every Democrat and every Republican was pretty much on board. Farley Weiss joins us now, president of the Israel Justice Organization, author of the 2023 book, Because It's Just and Right, The Untold Backstory of the U.S. Recognition of Jerusalem as the Capital of Israel. And moving the U.S. Embassy. Moving the U.S. Embassy there. Farley, welcome.
Good to be here, Brian.
So I feel like all systems are, we're seeing a ton of armaments go into Israel. You guys are getting armed up again. We are getting armed up again. It's never really stopped. We had another aircraft carrier group, and now we put our first ever hypersonic missile into theater. All indications are we're ready to go back.
Yeah, look, President Trump, who wrote the book, The Art of the Deal, knows that when you're dealing with fanatics, with the Iranian regime, and it's you have to only deal with them with the not just the threat of force, but with force. And that's the only way that you're going to get a good deal, if you're going to be able to get a deal at all with them, is only if they are put in a position where that their choice is either sign a deal or lose the regime. And that's what he's trying to do. And likely he's going to have to do more military force in order to get to that point.
Yeah, I want you to hear what Matt Continente said, because we're looking at the Strait of Hormuz is key to this. Cut 14.
We're in the battle of the blockades. President Trump has a very effective blockade on Iranian ports. It has sent the Iranian economy into a death spiral. But Iran maintains its blockade of the Strait of Hormuz, and that's leading to a spike in global energy prices, which are showing up on our shores at the pump. And so President Trump is in a position where he has to do something to break this battle of the blockades. And I think it's necessary for President Trump to find a way to open the Strait of Hormuz and deny the Iranian regime its final card. Once that's done, once we have safe passage through the Strait of Hormuz, the Iranians have no more cards to play, and this war will be over.
And the other card would be just taking out Karg, the whole island, make it zero ability to produce any type of oil. Which plan do you want?
I think that you do the first one with the Strait of Hormuz. You open it up. That reduces all the economic pressure on the war, and all the gas prices, everything starts going down. And if that still doesn't do it, you can always take out Karg Island afterwards.
So, yeah. So my sense is Israel Katz, who is the defense minister of Israel, said yesterday, he suggested that the talks aren't working, the current ceasefire is not effective, and he thinks it's time to confront Iran again. Now, would they do that without us?
No, I think that it's clear with the U.S. supplying Israel with more munitions that there's complete coordination, extraordinary coordination, unprecedented coordination between the United States and Israel. President Trump has decided to see what would happen, see how things would work, and has used the time to reload and has strengthened the sanctions against Iran, going after ships, Iranian ships all over the world, not just stopping them from the Strait of Hormuz. It's still not working, so now he's going to up it up with military force. That will happen, I think, within the week.
Look at, really, okay, I agree with you. I think, look at Israel right now. They're with Hezbollah. They're making, you know, they're digging in Lebanon, but it looks like Hezbollah has engineered or something bought a new drone that's not detectable by traditional defenses of Israel. That's very similar to what the Ukrainians are doing in Russia. They keep on with very cheap technology. They try to refine it. What could you tell us about that?
Well, the thing is that the whole purpose of Hezbollah, you know, is to destroy Israel, and doing anything they can to kill, murder as many people as they possibly can by any means possible, any technology, whatever they can do. Doesn't matter that their leadership was destroyed. Doesn't matter they've been crushed militarily, that Israel's gone right through them. You know, Israel thought 3 years ago that if Hezbollah attacked, Israel would lose 100, 200 people a day. They've lost less than 100 in going all the way through Hezbollah, all the way to the Litani River. So the Hezbollah still has some fighting skills, but Israel said they killed 200 Hezbollah people in the last 2 weeks. They're crushing Hezbollah. So every much you hear about the Israeli casualties, you don't hear about how decimated Hezbollah is becoming.
How about the war-weary country? Are they a little war-weary at this point?
No. Israel has completely turned around what happened on October 7, 2023, and destroying all of these proxies of Iran, and Iran itself has been crushed. And Hezbollah is being devastated, and even all the opposition people in Israel, the governments, everyone's aligned on this issue. The support for the fight against Hezbollah is like 90%. Israelis can't live in the north of the country because of the missiles from Hezbollah. As General Keane has talked about, they've had 50 violations of missiles fired at Israel since the last ceasefire, and they violated the previous ceasefire from attacking again from the November 20, 2024 ceasefire. And they violated a previous ceasefire on October 8, 2023. Hezbollah violates all agreements and everything they do, and all of the goal is to destroy and kill as many Jews as possible.
But yet, I guess Israel and Russia are speaking. And they have some type of relations, because I guess they got grain delivered from Russia. That's causing some controversy with the Gulf states.
I think at the end of the day, they didn't accept the grain. I think that they so that's my understanding that I just saw it in the last day or so. So I think when the whole controversy erupted, but they Israel is not close to Russia. Israel is. Russia is supporting Iran in the as came out in the war against Iran's war against Israel and the United States.
What is your how disappointed are you in Europe's reaction?
That's not unexpected. You know, with the problem is that even what's considered conservative governments, even in Italy or Germany. They're weak on all these issues. I think it's become obvious from this whole situation with Iran that Israel is the United States' best ally in the world, and Israel is the strongest military ally in the world. The best air force of any military ally the United States has in the world. The one that stands with the United States not just economically or says they support it diplomatically, but militarily is there fighting, and Israeli people are the ones suffering from the attacks.
So I'm looking at maybe 15,000 different strikes, airstrikes. I'm looking at the elimination of as many as 80 high-ranking government officials and scientists, as well as IRGC officials, military officers. But yet the Democrats are so worried about the president being successful. Listen to him yesterday pretending to question Secretary of War Pete Hegseth. Cut five.
We did not have any evidence that Iran intended to imminently attack this country in any way, shape, or form.
Do you and not you believe not- them when they say death to America?
If what you're seeing as success now is winning, I would hate to see what losing looks like.
We are 2 months into a historic military success in Iran, and you want to call it a defeat. And it's defeatist Democrats like you that cloud the mind of the American people.
Did you, through your broker at Morgan Stanley or otherwise, seek to invest in any defense-related funds right before Trump started the Iran war?
I'll give it to you as a big, fat negative.
100% right. And would they say that he's in the betting markets? You got to be kidding me. But the line of questioning, and there are so many legitimate questions. You know what? I looked, Farley, I looked at the Pete's face when he was being questioned by Senator Gillibrand, and he was astounded because behind closed doors, she was asking good questions. She was getting substantive answers, and she put on a performance for the cameras. But it does damage. Doesn't that resonate through the Middle East and people think that the president is losing ground with the American people because they see this and don't understand our system?
No question. Look, this is the most extraordinarily successful war probably in history. The Iranian regime, the military was considered a top 20 regime, military in the world, and they have destroyed them at 100-1 ratio of casualties. It's unprecedented doing it all from the air without having to use ground troops and to have the success that they've had. And people say, oh, you took out some people in the regime and the other people are just as bad. The fact of the matter is they said that the Iranian regime response was 60% less than what was expected because the leaders were taken out and they didn't have the same type of leadership in place. And everyone knows that if Hitler was taken out, Nazi Germany would never have been the same.
Right. But this said they were a little bit more diffuse with their leadership after what they saw, the mosaic. I guess the mosaic defense, when they saw Saddam Hussein get cut down and how the disarray and the dissolving of the Sunni government, I guess the Iranians went to town and said, if something happens to the central government, I want all the provinces to be able to function on their own. And we are seeing that now.
Well, I think that Iran still has a water shortage. They still have a tremendous devastation. Their economy, their currency is devastated. The people, 80% of the people just want the regime gone. The people are good people. It's the regime is bad. And so that makes a much easier case to get rid of the regime. It's a similar situation in many ways like with Venezuela, where the people hate the regime and the regime would lose overwhelmingly. But the difference is in Venezuela, you could just change one leader and make a lot of changes. Here, you have to change the entire regime in order to get changes.
What's it going to take for the people to rise up and not be slaughtered? Is there a plan in place? Do you hear about anything about arming them up? Arming up the people?
Well, I think what we've seen is that Israel's been able to use these drones that even knock out people at checkpoints. And I think that with the
drone
technology.
To besiege, right?
Yeah. And I think they're able to knock out a lot of different, there's a help that you can have. It's not just the population. You can help the population with putting drones inside the streets and all the areas to go after where the regime police forces are and get rid of them that way.
Right. General Keane was on with me an hour ago on Fox and Friends, and he was just talking about what we're dealing with and how to deal with it. Here's about the bloviating coming from Israel. Cut six.
They're always full of bluster. I mean, their rhetoric is considerably much stronger than what they're able to produce in reality in terms of military terms. I mean, that's what this is. It's for their own domestic population, you know, to show that they're still in charge here. They're standing up to the powers of Israel and the United States and also, obviously, for international consumption. I mean, the administration sees right through that.
Your thoughts?
Yeah, the Iranian regime, they talk a game, but they can't back it up anymore. And it's obvious if they could have done things that they say they could do, they would have done them already.
Do you think that with the laser, do you think things when we go back will be changed a little bit? For example, lasers were starting to be used. I think that's cost effective. I think our bases, the U.S. bases are starting to get fortified with them. Do you think they're going to be used more?
Oh, there's no question that's the future because it's so much cheaper than the Iron Dome to use these lasers to knock out missiles. It's the wave of the future, and it's going to only get more and more advanced.
Are you worried about terror attacks here in New York City?
Look, I have trust with the FBI and Kash Patel. I have trust with the Trump administration. I was much more worried about it under the Biden administration. Further, the Trump administration has kept all these students, these radical students, off of the campuses. And so that's been a massive difference on college campuses because of that. And so they're getting rid of all these bad people in America that were let in. And so that's making the United States much safer. But of course, we're concerned, especially in New York City with Mayor Mamdani. It's a disaster.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is I think you run on that in the fall. That's not really your thing. But just talk about what happened at colleges. You don't see those riots anymore. The president's moving on so many different fronts trying to get things done. But right now, this is Project 1A and B. And we'll see. He's not panicking, I'll tell you that. He wants to get it done. He talks to them every day. The problem is the Speaker of the House and the president of the country are on one side. The other side is the head of the IRGC and the foreign minister of the country who is talking to the new supreme leader. So if you're Trump, what are you saying? Like, of course you don't want to deal with the IRGC guy, but what's the sense of dealing with anybody else? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not sure that even the other people are so much better. They might be more realistic, but I think you got to get rid of the RIGC guy. Vahidi has to be killed. The sooner you get rid of him, the better. He was part of the responsibility for the 1994 terror bombing of the Amia Center, Jewish center in Argentina, in Buenos Aires. He's been indicted for it by Interpol. He's got a arrest warrant for him. These people have been evil people for a long time.
Right. That's what we're dealing with. That's why it makes me think that unless we get a guarantee that we go get the uranium, that we can put inspectors there on the sites, our eyes are on the sites. I don't want cameras, and they can't have a ballistic missile program. So that's something that these guys are never going to agree to.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think they're agreeing to anything. You really have to get rid of the regime. That's what General Keane has said, and I think that's the only goal. And I think that President Trump believes in that goal and wants to do that. I mean, these people have tried to assassinate President Trump a couple times already. He knows how evil they are.
All right, Farley Weiss, thanks so much. Great to get your perspective. President of the Israel Justice Organization. Thanks, Farley.
Thank you, Brian.
Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. That makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
What is your take on these reports that your show, The Apprentice, is going to come back on Amazon with host Donald Trump Jr.?
Well, I've been hearing it. Look, we had a great success, 14 seasons, and The Apprentice was a tremendous success. So I've been hearing that, you know, a little bit. So we'll see what happens. He's good. He's a good guy. He'd be probably good. He's got a little charisma going. You need a little charisma for that circumstance. So we'll see what happens. They told me about it. We'll see.
So what do you think Eric and Pete, do you think that he does not want? I read this and I thought, okay, that's lukewarm, but it is lukewarm. Why doesn't he just say, I'd love for my son to take over? He gets it. He was great on the show when he was one of the people.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to catch that lightning in a bottle again that Trump was.
So do you think that he's like being protective? I don't want him compared to me. Or do you think that he, remember how mad he got at Arnold when Arnold took over? Was he
his
fault?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I mean, maybe I think that if his son reignites it and does well, I think he'll be genuinely happy and proud for him. But he is a little lukewarm on it, it seems.
Right. I mean, this guy gets questions for everything. Come on in. Ask me any question you want. Now, hey, what about Liv? What about the Liv tour? So the Saudis come in with all their money. They take some of the best players, probably most of the best players in the world. Phil Mickelson, some of the most famous. And they just take them away. So the president even commented on that yesterday. But I want you to hear what Craig Ferguson said. I think this guy is hysterical. He had a great late night show. And he talked on The View about politics and what he shouldn't do. Cut 53.
So there's no politics in your show?
I don't talk about politics at all. So the reason why I don't talk, I'm sick of people that I agree with. Never mind people I don't agree with.
Yeah.
I'm just like, let's take an hour and a half. I'll go on stage. I'll tell you a bunch of jokes and do some stuff and tell some stories.
Right.
And at the end of it, all the stuff that you're angry about, it's still there. You can have it back.
Right.
I'm not taking it from you.
Right.
But my job is just to, And also, it was a choice that I made for myself, like a stylistic choice. Like, could I do it?
Yeah.
Could I fill a whole show with no politics? And turns out I can.
So I don't know where he's going to be. I think it's CNN. Is he going to be on CNN? I think that's it. But I when people ask me, who are some of the funniest people that you've interviewed on Fox and Friends? I always say him. And at the time, he was a stand-up. It was before he had his late-night show. And if you watch his late-night show, he had lived so much of that. You just appreciate the talent. Like, the other guy that I think is absolutely hysterical, and I didn't at the time when he was on, is Conan O'Brien. If you listen to that podcast, the guy is a riot. Other guys just have lost their sense of humor. These guys have maintained it.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. This hour, I'm going to be joined by my brother. He's going to break down his brand new soccer team that he started and also break down the World Cup. Guess what? We're within a month of this whole thing starting, and there's 8 games right at Giant Stadium, including the final. And we just had the Alex Lazary on television on Fox and Friends, and he says they're getting really, really close. Security's going to be extremely high, but they're actually growing the grass out in the parking lot. How great is that? The Giants and Jets will pay them to leave it there. They hate the turf. Keep in mind, too, the president's going to the Villages, not to look for a place, but to explain his new plan today. He is basically doing his has his 401k expanded IRA style accounts plan. So, for example, low income workers could receive up to $1,000 a year in federal matching funds. He's trying to help out seniors, as well as helping people out when they first start with Trump accounts. Financial literacy works, and I think his Secretary of Treasury is working on it. So before we get to Julian Epstein standing by and Jim Jordan in 15 minutes, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
All the evidence that I've seen, the suspect shot our officer point-blank range with a shotgun. Our officer heroically returned fire while being shot point-blank range in the chest with a shotgun. He was able to get off 5 shots.
Sean Curran, who runs the Secret Service, what we know about the WHCD shooter and his Secret Service takedown. Many questions answered. Some need to be defined.
Number two.
This will relieve pressure from the Department of Homeland Security. We were not going to have lines at TSA. Everybody will get their paychecks now. We'll get moving forward, and then we will finish the work.
Yep, that's Speaker Johnson. Good job. It's over. DHS is completely funded by June as the Democrats-led shutdown ends and a bad precedent of picking and choosing what to fund is now in play. I hate this idea because Republicans are going to start doing it, too. It's terrible. This is a win for the Speaker. Get those workers back pay right away.
Number one.
He's not going to make a bad deal himself. So we have a stalemate here. They own the Straits of Hormuz, and we have shut down all their exports with the blockade. So we could continue that, and because the blockade is definitely effective.
Yeah, it is. But as the general went on to tell me on Fox and Friends, economic constraints are not going to kill off this regime. And we'll explain. Supreme leader vows to fight on and hold on in Iran as Trump gets briefed on his war options, returning to war. I think Trump will go back to battle. I think he has to. Julian Epstein joins us now. Hey, Julian.
Brian, good morning.
Good morning. Do you think the president's heading back that direction just by knowing the way he acts and knowing that he's actually put more firepower into the region? I know he doesn't want to, but do you think, judging by the rhetoric coming out of Iran, he has to?
I think he will go back to surgical strikes. I think there are key targets that the Department of War has identified. I think the military blockade is having huge economic effects in Iran. As much as half of the economy could come to a standstill. You know the importance of oil, of petrochemicals, of pharmaceuticals in the country. It's about half the economy or more right there. All of those will sort of grind to a halt with the blockade. Iran doesn't have the capacity to store much more oil. So I think, I'm not as pessimistic about the economic effects of the blockade. I think it's been very effective, but I think it's going to need to be supplemented with military action.
So I want to bring you to the DHS. We've been talking on this show with you about the fact that everything was funded. 12 appropriations bills actually passed through the House and Senate. And then because of the incidents in Minneapolis where two people lost their lives and ICE and all their roving patrols, they said, we're not going to fund ICE or Border Patrol. And that standoff has really been staying in place. I was looking at the DHS secretary. He says he was borrowing money from the Department of War to keep the lights on in his buildings. So now they decide to fund everything except Border Patrol and ICE. So these people get back to work and get back pay. But don't you believe, Julian, this is a terrible precedent it is now set?
Yes. I've never seen anything like this. I mean, blackmailing critical elements of the government because you are prosecuting, in the case of the Democrats, a strategy that is very unpopular. I mean, what Democrats are doing here really is trying to force an open borders policy and shut down the effectiveness of ICE in terms of enforcing border security and deportations. They're using the two incidences in Minnesota. It's sort of irrelevant to the larger fight that's going on here. They claim there should be judicial warrants for certain actions on the part of DHS. That's not constitutionally sound. They say they want ICE officers not to wear masks, even though the left is propagating lots of violent rhetoric and there have been many attacks on ICE officials. So I think the arguments the Democrats have on policy are very, very weak. But this is just another way that the Democrats are playing to the open border space. They may think it's good politics, but it's really bad for the country.
So I want you to hear the back and forth with Elizabeth Warren and Chip Roy, cut 20.
This have taken 76 days.
No, talk to Democrats about that. They're the ones that have been blocking funding for ICE and Border Patrol and the rest of DHS for 76 days. Last night we got the reconciliation package through, which was actually fundamental to ensure that Border Patrol and ICE are getting funded.
We offered them that months ago. They just had an attack of sensibility over on the other side.
Well, I mean, the Senate did pass it back without paying, knowing that they're going to pay for it in a reconciliation bill June 1st or the first week in June. The House had trouble getting together because they couldn't believe that we're denying ICE and the Border Patrol money. Chip Roy went on to say this is a terrible precedent because Republicans are going to go back and do it too now.
Right. Yes, I think you're going to see a negative cycle here. It's a race to the bottom. If I were the Republicans, I would have just done reconciliation and all of this stuff to begin with. I think that's how it should have been handled. And I think they should have blown off the cloture vote. But I think you're right. I think this sets a really bad precedent. And again, I think the Democrats are masquerading arguments about judicial warrants, which don't really apply in a immigration enforcement setting. They're masquerading those arguments because what they're really doing is playing to an open borders left-wing base that is out of touch and out of step with the American people. So, but in terms of this sort of opening the Pandora's box, I couldn't agree with you anymore. I think this kind of holding the government hostage and blackmailing for the desires of the one party's political base, I think that's here to stay now, unfortunately. So I think we're going to see a lot more of this.
So I want to talk about what the Supreme Court decided, and that is in Louisiana and around the country, you can no longer district on the basis of race. Democrats are saying, here comes Jim Crow again, 2.0. They're saying this is a huge step back. We're not going to have any minority representatives. It's going to be a backstep for race relations in our country. I think that we were bracketing out by race is racist. I would love to see redistrict, judging by the way, Republicans getting more and more of the black vote, more and more of the Hispanic vote, so you can't even generalize anymore. But you're a lawyer, Julian. Your thoughts about this?
Well, I think what the court is saying here is a couple of things, Brian. They're saying what they said in the affirmative action case, which is that race should play no role in any aspect of public policy. It shouldn't play any role in college admissions, and it shouldn't play any role in the formation of congressional districts. I think that's the general principle it's stating, and it's been very consistent on that. What it is saying with respect to these majority-minority districts, these sort of monolithically black or Hispanic districts, is that you can't make it harder for a black or Hispanic candidate to get elected to office. You also just can't make it easier by stacking the entire district with voters of the candidate's race. I think it's also saying what the point that you just made, which is, you know, it may have been true in an earlier era post Jim Crow that white voters would not vote for a black candidate in the South. But I think the court is saying that's no longer true. Look at Byron Donalds in Florida, for example, likely the next governor of Florida. Look at Tim Scott in South Carolina. Barack Obama received resounding victories twice with a lot of crossover Republican votes. So four of the last five presidential elections, there's been a black candidate on the ticket, even though black Americans represent 13% of the public. So I think it's saying it's an even standard for everyone, and this idea that you need to protect black and brown candidates by stacking their districts with voters of the same race, I think they're saying that is sort of from a bygone era and it doesn't apply anymore. Most importantly, Brian, I think what's going to happen is you're going to see 12, 13 seats in the South shift from Democrat to Republican as a result of this. You're going to see another dozen go Republican because of out-migration from places like California, yeah, and New York and Illinois.
Census, yeah.
And then the Supreme Court will probably block the use of illegal immigrants in the census count in 2030. This all could translate into a 30-plus gain for Republicans, which could mean Republican control of the House for as far as the eye can see after 2030. And the Democrats have a choice now, whether they want to dig in and double down on sort of identity politics, demography is destiny, the big welfare state, or if they want to move to the political center on those questions, because I think they're going to need to do that in order to be viable post-2030 in the House.
Julian, it would make me and you feel great. So if a Democrat wins center-left, if Republicans win center-right, I don't want the extremes. And right now, the Democrats are running the extremes, and they have all the momentum. Julian Epstein, thanks so much.
Brian, thanks for having me again.
You got it. Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
And the Senate didn't even bother to have the respect for the American people to put up a vote. It's unacceptable. And then just send us back for 45 days. I don't know what they think. What's going to change in 45 days? It took us this long to get to a bipartisan solution.
So that long to get to a bipartisan solution. There you go. Scott Perry, congressman, yesterday was talking about the extending the FISA for an extension. I'm not sure what went back and forth with the play-by-play was, but as much as FISA has been abused, I think with the right guardrails, we absolutely need it. And when I have people that I trust, like the Secretary of War, say it, I believe it. Joining us now is Chairman Jim Jordan. Chairman, what's going on with FISA? Why did you have to compromise in just the 45 days?
Well, the Senate didn't want to take up some of the reforms that didn't want to vote for some of the reforms that were in our bill. So we'll see. We're back negotiating. But I think you hit the nail on the head when you said this is an important program. It's important that we spy on bad guys overseas and find out what they may be trying to do to we the people here in this great country. But when you do that, you want to do it in a way that protects Americans' liberties. And so we think we've had good reforms put in place over the years that have, we know, made a difference, because we literally went from 278,000 times in 2021 where these searches and these queries done on the database of information were done in a way that they weren't supposed to be. They weren't following the rules. And that number was 127 last year, and most of those were just sort of typos and clerical errors when they did the query, did the search. So we know we've made huge progress with the reforms we had. We still would like to get a few more reforms there to protect Americans' liberties. But we need this program. And so we did another short term, 45 days, and we'll continue to work on it. But we're not going to let this program go dark, as they say, because it's really, really important.
Speaker was happy yesterday. It took a long time, but and it's Democratic generated about defunding certain elements of the Department of Homeland Security. Here he is, cut 17.
This will relieve pressure from the Department of Homeland Security. We were not going to have lines at TSA. Everybody will get their paychecks now. We'll get moving forward, and then we will finish the work.
So you finally guys had to give in. I know you hated to do it, but sometimes you got to do what's possible, right?
Yeah, and you want to fund this. I mean, after all, we had a third assassination attempt on President Trump. We happen to be in a military operation in Iran. It makes sense to have the Department of Homeland Security fully funded and operating. And understand what the Democrats are up to, Brian. I said this on the floor the other day. Think about their plan when it comes to with defunding ICE. So they started by letting in 10 million illegal migrants in the Biden administration. Let 10 million illegal migrants in the country. Then they create sanctuary jurisdictions all over the country to make it difficult to remove those illegal migrants when they commit another crime. And now they're saying, oh, we don't want to pay the guys who do the removing. We're not going to pay ICE. I mean, such a deal. But that is literally the Democrats' plan. And I said on the floor, I think that plan is there because they don't want a border. And understand on the sanctuary jurisdiction issue, there are 18 cities, 11 states, 3 counties, and the District of Columbia designated as sanctuary jurisdiction. Now, because those are big blue cities, big blue states, that represents almost a third of the country, almost a third of the population of this country, live in a jurisdiction where the politicians tell local law enforcement not to work with federal law enforcement when it comes to enforcing federal law. That is just crazy, but that is their plan. And so much so that they don't even want to fund the guys who do the removing. This is how ridiculous the Democrat Party has become. And so yesterday, we passed that. And then we also took this week the first step into doing what via reconciliation, this different method of funding things where you don't have to get the supermajority vote in the Senate to make sure we do fund ICE so they can do their job.
So, Chairman, too, I think in New York, it's going to get worse. They want zero cooperation between local and national. So Tom Homan's going to come in here and be virtually by himself. We could have a lot of friction here. But that's what you got to do to get elected in New York, which is sad. Might open the door for Bruce Blakeman on Long Island to make a difference in the governor's race, because there's a lot of reasonable people here. But now it's so, if you get this funded, you're going to have a reconciliation package. Where does Jim Jordan stand on adding things to the skinny reconciliation in terms of the Save America Act? What do you want and what's possible?
Yeah, I said this in conference 2 weeks ago. I think we should be it should be a bigger bill. I think we should focus on elements from the Save America Act. I think we should focus on fraud prevention. I mean, we see what's happened up in Minneapolis, what's happened in California, where they're just ripping off taxpayers. So I think there should be those elements in there. But if we can't get there, I do think we have to fund ICE. I mean, we just have. I mean, think about the Democrats. As I said, let in 10 million, create sanctuary jurisdictions so it's tough to remove them when they commit crimes, and then don't fund ICE. It wasn't enough for Democrats and the left-wing agitators who are part of their party. It wasn't enough to dox ICE agents, to track them, to spit on them, to harass them, to threaten them, to attack them. That wasn't enough. Now they don't even want to pay them. So they got to get paid. And if we have to do it via a skinny reconciliation, as it's been called, okay. But I would certainly prefer we go bigger and deal with some of the other elements that I think are important to American taxpayers.
Last minute, Chairman. What's going on in Ohio? The governor's race is squeaky tight, and so is the Senate race. So I thought this was, you guys were going as red as Florida.
Yeah, well, we are. I mean, President Trump won Ohio 8.5 and 16, 8.5 points in 20, and 11.5 in 24. So we have made tremendous movement because President Trump But yeah, they're close right now, and we're just going to have to work hard. You know, they always say that the midterm election year is always tough for the parties in power in the White House, and so we understand that. But I think we're going to win both of them. We've got good candidates in Vivek and Senator Husted.
Does the Supreme Court ruling put the House back in your corner?
It does help us. It certainly does. I think Louisiana is going to redraw. We've been Florida, of course, this week. The governor and the legislature are working on that. So I do think this gerrymandering, it's been back and forth all year. We'll see what happens with the Virginia courts after the referendum a couple weeks ago.
Jim Jordan,
all right.
We handled 10 topics in 12 minutes. Nobody else could have done that except you. With your speed.
I think it's you.
Chairman, thanks so much. Back in a moment.
Is 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We're moving through this Friday, and it's a busy, busy day. With me in studio, I believe for the first time, is my brother Jim. Jim, why would you come to a place like this?
I had nothing to do this morning. I was just driving around Manhattan. I said, well, why not?
Yeah, because you're excited. Because tomorrow, the real answer is May 2nd, you open up your brand new season. The American Soccer Club, the NPSL, the league, this will be your second season. You're pumped up. Plus, we've got the World Cup in a month, 4 or 5 weeks. So there's a lot of interest in soccer, finally.
May, the biggest year in American soccer history, and we've been it almost from the beginning in the 70s when we started down in Long Island, but this is a big year. So tomorrow night's our big opener at Mitchell Athletic Complex, historic, the most historic soccer facility on Long Island. Goes way, way back. And so we're pumped up. We're 25, 26 hours away, and we can't wait. And then the World Cup follows us, which is nice.
Right. So there's some tickets available. So if you want to go see it live, you also stream the game, right?
We stream the game in frame, broadcast. I was on our YouTube channel. So you pick it up live stream at 6 p.m.
All right. So you're looking to raise the next generation of great players. And you have the American Soccer Club there at Mitchell Field starting May 2nd. So go get your tickets now if you're in the area, especially you WABC listeners. But Jim, today we had Alex Lazry on. He is running the New York, New Jersey facility, you know, the Giant Stadium. He's the CEO there. You know, his parents, his family own the Milwaukee Bucks. So he is running this facility. Here's what he says about what's going on so far and some of the things they're talking about in terms of affordability, Cut 50.
What our job is really to try to provide affordable and accessible experiences inside and outside the stadium. And one of the things that makes the World Cup so unique are all the people that are going to be coming here, not even planning to go to the game at MetLife, but actually just planning to be part of the World Cup experience. And so last week we announced with the mayor and governor of New York, the 5-borough free fan experiences at the U.S. Tennis Center, Rock Center, the Bronx, Staten Island, Brooklyn. And then also we've also got on the other side of the river in New Jersey, we've got our Jersey Fan Hub at Sports Illustrated Stadium, and then also a 21 county watch party experience that the governor of New Jersey and I will be announcing in the next few weeks.
What do you think? Because you know about marketing. So if you can't get to the game and you don't have $5,000, go to the city.
Here's my only problem with it. That's the first time I've heard about it. I'm involved in this thing 24/7. It has not hit the ground. People do not know these opportunities are out there. And they'll be welcomed, and it's still not too late, but they have not gotten the word out yet at all. I mean, I went to the World Cup at MetLife Stadium. It was then Giant Stadium.
In 94?
94. Italy, Norway. We tailgated for 3 hours before the game, played soccer in the parking lot, had a great time, hung out afterwards. It was fantastic. There's not going to be any of that this year. But I'm still very bullish about it, but I'd like to see more grassroots activities out there.
I mean, you had nothing to do. So you were able to hang out for 3 hours before the game and then hang out after the game?
It was a different world in the
90s. You would never be able to do that.
My phone didn't even have pictures on it. You know?
You probably didn't have a phone at all. So, Jim, give everyone an example of your background. Not only are you a great player through Hofstra, you're your captain, but you started with indoor soccer was once huge. You started with the Arrows. And then that's where you met the Leiwickies.
That's right. Todd Leiwicki, to this day, my mentor. What a great guy. Tim, his brother. What a dynasty. No one ever went to college. Mike Rowe would love these guys. But they're the greatest marketers, I think, in American sports, or among them. With the New York Arrows, but the Steve Jungle days, we actually increased attendance by trading away all the expensive players and bringing in all local players. Hence what we've done later on with the Rough Riders when you were involved with us, and now again with the American Soccer Club. Best Long Island, New York Metro players, put them on the field. I think we could do some damage.
Right. So now you did with the Rough Riders before there was an MLS. And then the MLS launches after the World Cup, and now you're coming back with the American Soccer Club. So how is it different from when you launched the Rough Riders?
Dramatically different. The good news is that Don Garber, MLS, fantastic job. Almost on the edge of collapsing in the Europe 2000. And now look what we have right now. So great job to elevate the game. But the youth soccer market and the development of soccer market is probably a bigger disaster than it's ever been. And there's more kids playing, but it's not producing players. And right now that's the big conversation that Landon Donovan is leading and others.
Because Landon Donovan says, who's one of the greatest American soccer players ever, said if, and Tim Howard said the same thing. And it's pretty much, it's not just soccer. If they were coming up right now, they wouldn't be able to play because they can't afford to pay the coaches. They can't afford to pay the trainers. They can't go to Disney every year. They can't go travel. And
Arizona,
you know, they obviously were the best in the country.
Right.
But if you're just an average player, your parents, your lower middle class, your middle class, you know, I'm sorry, I have other kids. You can't play. We'll go play flag football. It's free.
Well, that's happening now. But look at our family, three boys, Jim, Brian, and Steven. As you said the other day, we had to choose one of our family as a middle-class family could not afford this.
Yeah.
But families are going into debt now to do this, and it's not just soccer. It's all youth sports. So we can't fix the whole thing, but it is definitely not a recipe for developing soccer players.
So you didn't say the big issue. So our whole soccer club in the 70s went to Holland, which is unthinkable.
I knew this was going to come up.
Right, and here we go. My whole team goes to Holland, and I don't go. I go to Pennsylvania to Stroudsburg Soccer Club because only one of us could go, and they chose you.
I have never lived this day.
Right.
I had nothing to do with the decision, by the way.
Right.
But, sorry, Mom, Dad. Brian's still under the bus.
But yeah, you got to go,
I did.
That's all I heard in my town for the next 5 years of how much fun Holland was. And I would say, well, East Stroudsburg was a blast as well as I sat there in Pennsylvania in the mountains.
Yeah, I know.
In the Poconos.
I had gone to that camp the year before. It was a good camp, you have to admit, but it wasn't quite like Holland. But just tells you, though, our club was so far ahead of things. We had fantastic coaches, great leadership, Pat McComiskey, Gordon Bradley founding the club with Hank Ostecki, and then the coaches we all had, including our dad. And then this is a club that became the biggest club in the country, a small South Shore town, and arranged a European trip before this was popular.
All right, so let's talk about the American team. Last time we saw them play, well, the second to last time, they played two games in 3 days against Belgium, tight in the first half, but it all fell apart in the second. Let's listen.
Goku causing problems once again, Matt Turner with the save. All the way out for the Bass to drive it in. Belgium a level in the final minutes of the first half in Atlanta. De Bast from distance with a first international goal. Doku can find him. Doku against McKenzie. And now it's Onana. It's 2-1 Belgium. Doku against Ware. Doku's ball in. Gets the return. It's Doku all the way through. Turner with a big save.
So look, they lose 5-2. Right, I know they're using their whole roster, but I want the U.S. team has to get to the final eight or four. They got to find a way.
Yeah.
Not in that game.
No.
I mean, Belgium is not, they're a really good European team, but I mean, we got to be able to play with them.
Right, and that's the thing. In the past, we have. You understand? We've taken Germany to the last kick in the World Cup before. We've beaten Portugal. We've beat Spain in the world in the club in the World Cups. Not the World Cup, but the CONCACAF championships. We have done this before. We have seemed to have regressed when it comes down to playing against elite European and South American competition. That Belgium game, you heard Doku a lot. I mean, the guy is a great player.
I mean, you just had all they gave him is a slight window, and he scored.
It
wasn't like he wasn't being covered.
But here's the deal. We didn't make any adjustments for it. Now, I'm going to be positive, though. I think our coach, he's an Argentinian coach, is helped bring back the American mentality. I like it. He is not tolerating, if he doesn't understand how people wouldn't die for their country. We're starting to see a team now that really cares. This last two games were a bit of a setback. I wasn't too excited over the last great ones, the great results we had with Paraguay and Uruguay and the performances. I'm not going to get too down over these last two games.
All right, so we open up with three games. First one's Los Angeles and Seattle, then back to Los Angeles.
Right.
I'll be at the first one covering it, so I'll be there. Tell me about the matchups. You got Paraguay, well, number one.
First, we'll have to say what we're going to call Turkey. Is it Turkey or Turkey A? So that's how it is.
Lawless calls it Turkey A, so okay. I'll go along with
all
that.
Right. If Alexei does, it's good
they
enough for me.
They changed the name of their country. What makes you do that? I know
Czech
Trump
Republic
does that
too.
A lot.
Czech Republic, too. It's
Turkey
Czechia.
Changed the name of the country. Just changed the name of the Gulf.
And a couple of mountain ranges, maybe.
Yeah, and just put his face on money. But that's I don't want to regress.
That's just the minor issue.
Yeah, absolutely. So talk about the three teams. Can we beat Turkey?
Absolutely. But we could also lose 3-1 to Turkey. Turkey is a dangerous team. They have some injuries right now. They're a team that can play against anybody. They have enormous talent. They tend to be a little bit disorganized in the back. And it comes down to, can we actually dictate the game? Or are we going to do a counterattack? Are we going to be more of a counter team? Against Turkey, I like to think that we're actually going to try and get a little bit more on the front foot, as they say.
Australia. We got to beat those guys.
Yeah. Australia is like us a few years back. Incredibly fit, strong, athletic, incredibly well defending and organized. Not a lot of creativity up front to score goals. We have more players in the forward third than they do that can score. But they're going to pack it in. They're going to be very tough to play against.
Right. They know the head to head. We have more of talent.
We do.
All right. And then Paraguay.
Paraguay's a wild card. They could end up getting on fire. I think we beat Paraguay.
You know how small Paraguay is?
I know.
I mean, it's like Rhode Island. We should be killing these guys.
Rhode Island with less population, I think. But they have talent. They have talent. They have players in Europe. I see. We just got to get out of the gate. You know, I analyze these games. We got to get points. We're going to be very pragmatic. We have an experienced coach. I'm not worried about it. We have the players. But we tend to, when we have our best players, we tend not to play as well for 90 minutes. And when we have our second level players, if you want to call them that, we tend to play very well for 90 minutes, but not at that high level. So
not a good combination. So here's the thing. You got to come out of this. I don't know where that happened. We'll get rid of that. I don't know how that happened.
There's Alexei coming through.
Yeah, so we have to come out first. So the U.S. team has to place first in order to play against a lower seed in another conference.
Right.
If we just get through to the knockout round, we're going to get ourselves in trouble because you're going to get a matchup that you want to meet later on.
Exactly right. Like we got out of the group last time. We ended up Holland, Netherlands right away. Really tough team. And we did well against them but couldn't beat them. So I'm encouraged, but I think I'm just going to look at this the way the coach looks at it. It's one game at a time. You got to take every game. I want to see the fight and desire that I saw from the Clint Dempsey, Brian McBride, Tab Ramos, Claudio Reyna teams, Alexi Lalas. Those teams, you didn't want to play against us back then, even when we didn't have 20 guys deep. We were a tough out, and I want to see that with the talent we have now.
All right, I want you to hear more from Alex Lazary. He wants to put in perspective how popular this game will be. Which one did I play last time? Let's go 51.
So the teams are going to be training here, but everyone's talking about the final, July 19th at 3 o'clock. You get to that moment, you can finally exhale.
That's going to be the biggest sporting event that the world has ever seen. Just for some perspective, the last World Cup final was viewed by the same amount of people as the last 13 Super Bowls combined.
Wow.
So, you know, football is America's sport. Football is the world sport, and we're going to have billions of people watching and being a part of the World Cup right here in our region. It's going to be an incredible thing. We haven't had a World Cup in 30 years. This is going to be an exciting event.
So, I mean, put that in perspective. I think everyone's going to be watching, and the tickets are going for, I think, $20,000.
I know. I remember I bought my tickets off the secondary market for $350, and it seemed insane that we did that. And now
to get the train
from
New York City to New Jersey,
let's make it a little
$100
more
round trip.
You're getting it in every end. It's just ridiculous. We have such poor leadership in our area between New Jersey and New York that make it even worse and tougher to go to. And we love to tailgate this country, but I guess for security reasons, we can't.
So what they wanted to do, I guess in Europeans, they walk to the games.
That's
a tradition.
They do.
So they would like to walk
from
New York City to New Jersey. And now they want to prevent people from walking it. They said it's too dangerous.
Right.
But you're not going to stop these people. Number one, they don't want to pay the money. Number two is, how do you stop people from walking?
Right.
So they're going to walk over.
Well, what is it, 10 miles to get to the Meadowlands from here?
Yeah.
Through a tunnel? Under a river? I mean, it's ridiculous. I think it's actually going to get worse. And let's just hope there's no security issues that happen between now and then. Obviously, the assassination attempt doesn't make it easier to relax a little bit here. So, but it is a problem. It's going to be a different World Cup. I do think once you get to the game, it's going to be phenomenal.
All right. Lastly, big announcement today, right? I mean, this to your team started 2 years ago. They had nothing.
Game changer.
And then what happened today?
We were a concept, and we went from concept to operation. Played May 4th last year, had a very successful season, put a stake in the ground. And we great partners like LifeVac, Erlen & Cohen, Northwell Orthopedic, Macron, and all these other local sponsors we have. But this year, we've stepped it up with Chase Bank. But specifically today, we made a huge announcement. It's a game changer. It's going to change the dynamic in the tri-state area for youth soccer as well. Bowler Markets, great Harry Singh, the great American success story, 1984, taxi driver to one of the most successful businessmen in the United States right now. Bowler Markets has joined the American Soccer Club as our presenting sponsor. They're on the front of the jersey with LifeVac and on the back. But most importantly, they've established with us the American Soccer Club, Bowler Markets, Young Fighting Tomcats, the first fully funded youth soccer academy.
That's your name, the Tomcats.
In Long Island. The Fighting Tomcats after the Long Island's great aviation history with the Grumman Corporation and the F-14 fighter jet. But now we have Bowler is stepped up to provide opportunities for kids, remove all socioeconomic barriers for kids that may cannot afford it. And this is going to be huge for us. And the key thing for us, it's a supplemental program. So if you're playing for your local club in Northport where I live or Massapequa where you live, mm-hmm. you stay with your club and you come with us.
And train for free.
Train for free with our coaching staff. And the biggest thing, you're going to be training like you are in Europe and South America right. with the men, with our pro team.
Wow, that would be fantastic. So you get the coaches right there while you're playing. So that's
right.
fantastic.
Different experience.
All right, Jim. So where do you get tickets?
ASCNewYork.com. You can also, there's a great special by LifeVac. All children 10 and under, they will come to the game. LifeVac is buying two complimentary tickets for every kid along Long Island and Metro New York for no money, and their parents come for 10. ASCNewYork.com to get tickets.
But I want the kids to come with ID. I don't want an 11-year-old getting on this deal.
ID is racist. Right, we can't have racist.
Wait. Birth certificate. The birth certificate should be around. I mean, 10 years old,
Social
you should
security
be
card?
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. But I don't
Bus
want
to. Pass,
you if you're a 12-year-old, don't pretend you're 10. All right? It's 10 and under. All right, congratulations, Jim. Year two is ready to go. The Fighting Tomcats, American Soccer, and also you got to come back and continue, American Soccer Club, you got to come back and continue to break down the World Cup as we get closer. The roster is going to be announced the day after Memorial Day, the Tuesday after Memorial Day. The roster is going to be announced. I'm going to cover it then. There's a lot of great players, so just making the roster is a big deal. And then I'll be able to talk to the players. I'll bring that back, and then you can analyze that. All right?
Great stuff.
All right. Back at home, you listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadeShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Was it worth it? 76 days, was this DHS funding shutdown worth it?
I mean, you just got to look at, I think you have to ask Republicans those questions, right? In terms of what was just passed, it was the 90% provision, is that right?
Yeah.
And the CBPI provision wasn't included. And
right.
so, you know, I mean, I think it is important to block that CBP and ICE funding without accountability. And I think that's what transpired. I think that's what happened and what occurred. And what I think is foolish is that Republicans shut down the entire government twice.
Does anybody for a second buy her ridiculous logic that the Republicans shut it down twice? Appropriations funded everything through the actual committee process. It was all done. And they decide to pull two things, Border Patrol and ICE, out of the funding. Republicans say, you got to be kidding me. They say, we want some reforms. He goes, well, we're doing reforms. Got rid of Kristi Noem, put body cams on, have serial numbers instead of names, and we no more roving patrols, okay? And they said, no, that's not good enough. We're not funding it. What do you mean not funding it? We want warrants. Warrants? So if I got to go knock on a lean-to in the middle of Chicago, I got to get a warrant? It's impossible. It's unconstitutional to get a federal warrant for all this stuff. So it's impossible. So instead of trying to negotiate, they just didn't fund it. And after 73 days, Republicans said, we're just going around you. And she blames Republicans. Quick note. My state show is going to Reno, Nevada, May 30th. See me there. BrianKilmeade.com.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Coming up this hour, Shannon Bream is standing by. Jonathan Albert, a psychologist, the author of a new book, Therapy Nation, How America Got Hooked on Therapy and Why It's Left Us More Anxious and Divided Than Ever. He'll be joining us via Zoom so you can watch the stream. And, of course, don't forget One Nation. It's going to be Sunday at 10 o'clock. Great roster of guests, including Andrew Colbert. He's going to be joining us. Turning Point, where are they at right now as they start a fresh year in the midterms? Man, the president's counting on them. Also amongst our guests is going to be Mike Pence and Peter Schweitzer, who's going to be joining us too, and Abby Hornacek will be doing media. So it's going to be a big show. So I hope everyone can join us. But let's, before we get to Shannon Bream, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
All the evidence that I've seen, the suspect shot our officer point-blank range with a shotgun. Our officer heroically returned fire while being shot point-blank range in the chest with a shotgun and was able to get off five shots.
All right, there you go. That is some of the answers that we're looking for when it comes to the White House shooting. Excuse me, the correspondent White House Correspondents' Dinner shooting. We're going to get some more answers today.
Number two.
This will relieve pressure from the Department of Homeland Security. We were not going to have lines at TSA. Everybody will get their paychecks now. We'll get moving forward, and then we will finish the work.
There you go. We are talking about Speaker Johnson, who found a way to get DHS partially funded. He's going to get the rest done with the reconciliation package. We'll discuss it.
Number one.
He's not going to make a bad deal himself. So we have a stalemate here. They own the Straits of Hormuz, and we have shut down all their exports with the blockade. So we could continue that, and because the blockade is definitely effective.
That is General Jack Keane. Supreme Leader vows to fight on and hold out in Iran as Trump gets briefed on our war options, our return to war options. I think Trump will go back to battle, and I think Israel is prepared to do the same. So we're looking at a few things. If you want to know how difficult it is to deal with Iran, we're a victim of our own success in a way. We've taken out about 80 of their leaders, militarily as well as political. And if you see them going back and forth, the guy who looks like he's in charge is Major General Ahmed Vahidi. So he's the one in charge. Why is he in charge? Well, highest ranking officer, and he is in direct contact, the only one, with Supreme Leader Khamenei, the new guy. All right. On the other hand, you got the president of the country and the prime minister and the speaker mad that the foreign minister is siding with the IRGC and the Supreme Leader. It is crazy. Shannon Bream, make sense of all this.
You know, I would love to, Brian. The White House has not called me on this specific issue. They do consult me on other things like the Supreme Court, but not on solving the situation in Iran. I wonder where we are. I mean, obviously, it would have been the top headline over the last week that we're still in this conflict absent the shooting at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. But it's kind of taken a back seat. It's not going anywhere, though. I mean, people are still looking at their gas prices. They're still wondering how this thing ends. You know, Pete Hegseth, Secretary of War, taking 2 days of really tough questioning back and forth on the Hill. And we still don't know what the next step is or who's negotiating on the Iranian side.
So
sure.
You see the Israelis, their defense minister said, look, I don't know what we're waiting for. The talks are going nowhere. Would they? You think they'd attack without us?
I don't know. I mean, they have done things that are independent of the U.S., and there has been a little bit of daylight with them on this particular mission as well. There have been some calls, I think, back and forth, trying to get coordinated and a little heat back and forth a little bit. I think we're at such a critical point, though. I can't imagine them launching into another really destructive round of kinetic action without coordination with the U.S., but they are their own sovereign country, and they could do that if they decide to.
Yeah, so I want you to hear a little of the sparring that went on when you and I, a lot of people listening to us right now might have been busy yesterday between Secretary of War with Gillibrand, Blumenthal, and others on the left. Cut five.
We did not have any evidence that Iran intended to imminently attack this country in any way, shape, or form.
Do you not believe them when they say death to America?
If what you're seeing as success now is winning, I would hate to see what losing looks like.
We are 2 months into a historic military success in Iran, and you want to call it a defeat. And it's defeatist Democrats like you that cloud the mind of the American people.
Did you, through your broker at Morgan Stanley or otherwise, seek to invest in any defense-related funds right before Trump started the Iran war?
I'll give it to you as a big, fat negative.
So where she got that from, I don't know. But what was your take on the tone?
Well, I mean, he obviously came ready for it, and he knew what he was going to get. And listen, Democrats feel like the president should have come to them already, and now we're getting to this, you know, heated battle about, you know, the 60-day mark, and what does it mean? And, you know, if Secretary Hegseth is going to argue there's a pause while there's a ceasefire that doesn't count against the clock. I mean, Democrats have been itching to get defense officials in front of them to get answers about this. And because they haven't gotten it directly from the White House, I think he absolutely knew, he and Raisin Kane walking into this thing, that they were going to have these really tough questions. And he is not someone who is going to shrink from that. And in fact, I think he came looking forward to the sparring, and we all got to watch it.
Yeah. So in terms of where we go from here and the clash on Capitol Hill, do you believe legally the War Powers Act? I mean, it's a joke because Obama never had to deal with it. Stayed in Libya for months. There was no problem. But now in 60 days, they're going to look to have a vote on the War Powers Act. And so, well, at least one Republican, Susan Collins, wants to vote on it. So this is what Pete basically says. No, there's a pause on that when it comes to the War Powers Resolution. Listen to this. Cut four.
On Iran. Ultimately, I would defer to the White House and White House counsel on that. However, we are in a ceasefire right now, which our understanding means the 60-day clock pauses or stops in a ceasefire. That's our understanding, just so you know.
Okay, well, I do not believe the statute would support that. I think the 60 days runs maybe tomorrow, and it's going to pose a really important legal question for the administration. We have serious constitutional concerns, and we don't want to layer those with additional statutory concerns.
So, does it pause?
Well, I love that he said that's our understanding, which is that not saying like we've got a finding from the Office of Legal Counsel or we've got, you know, precedent. It's, you know, you choose your words very carefully. That's our understanding. But you're right that in so many of these recent conflicts, there was no demanding that President Biden or President Obama comply with these deadlines. Congress has sort of abdicated and given a lot of deference to the executive to move in these areas. And so it's going to be hard for those who didn't speak up when their party was in power to now insist that this is the only way it's done and you've got to come at day 60. I think that, you know, this administration is going to have a lot of room to wiggle on this to say, you guys didn't care with respect to Syria and all kinds of other places. And so it's rich to make the argument now.
What about the War Powers Act? When people say it's unconstitutional, needs to be challenged, how would you do that?
Well, I think, you know, if Congress tried to strip away funding from this particular conflict, or in some way strip away funding that the administration feels that the Pentagon and these warfighters are entitled to and legally have, I could see that would be an inflection point where you then end up in litigation where they're saying like, hey, listen, you didn't come to us, and so we cut off the funding that allowed you to continue this fighting or could have been used for that. And the White House then saying, listen, under our constitutional powers, he's a commander chief and he has the right to move here, and the War Powers was never going to limit him and is illegal and unconstitutional. So like everything else in this current administration, I think litigation would be the way to go.
So for example, let's say 60 days comes up and they vote to stop the funding. The administration doesn't stop the funding, right?
Mm-mm.
They say
no,
we're suing.
But you know, Congress does have some levers. But again, Republicans are the majority, obviously, in the House and Senate, very, very tiny majorities. And you are going to have some crossovers, you've mentioned before. But Congress does control the purse, and they would have some levers to try to activate to stop some of this funding.
Okay, good to know. We'll see what happens. Now, put in perspective, you can, Shannon, what they decided in Louisiana and how they say you can no longer district on pure race. So what can you district on, number one? And number two, why are Republicans potentially in for a boon on this?
Well, they can say, well, we can do partisan districting. We can district based on party. And so that, you know, that gets you around the issue of saying, you know, you can't do this on race. Because listen, the justices said it is exceptionally rare that there's ever a time that it's okay to do something that's going to wind up discriminating on the basis of race. And they said this is definitely not one of these occasions, not what the Voting Rights Act was meant for. And, you know, the plaintiffs who were suing against this second majority black district down in Louisiana said, well, you know, you're going to discriminate against us as non-black voters. That can't possibly be constitutional. What was intended intended. And 6-3, the court said the same thing. So what it means now is that a lot of these states across the South, where there were districts drawn specifically to remedy what we were told was a race problem, they're going to be able to go back and reexamine those. Now, how many of them can do that within the constraints of whatever primaries they've already had, the legislative sessions they can or can't call, the calendars and the clocks they've got running? It's going to be different in every state, but we're already seeing some of them say, okay, well, this now justifies us undoing some of these districts. So whether they Republicans get the benefit in 26 or 28, I think that they are going to see concrete results to their advantage and to their benefit as a result of that decision this week.
So that could be quick. I know that right away Louisiana delayed. So they delayed their primaries, and Tennessee's the other place they're targeting. And we'll see. And Democrats want to go back and give another shot at Maryland and New York. Can they do that? Didn't courts already rule that they couldn't?
Well, they can't do anything that's on the basis of race. Now, if they want to go argue that they're redistricting because of population shifts or because of a partisan goal, those are the kinds of things that they can still argue, but they cannot go out there and say, we're going to do this on the basis of race. Now, one of the things that was a big argument now out in California when they were challenging the redistricting there was some of the arguments were, you're doing these districts to group Hispanics together, so you have done these districts on the basis of race. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see litigation pop up out there in California, too.
Shannon, as usual, Democrats call racism. Cut 49.
This is Jim Crow in new clothes.
We are spiraling towards being an anti-democratic country. We need to reclaim our democracy.
The reason the Supreme Court dismantled the Voting Rights Act is because they want to be able to create the kind of Viktor Orban democracy-proof Duma.
To take that, ball it up, and throw it in the toilet, flush it, and have the president crowing about it is devastating.
So this is meant to discourage you from voting.
A despicable decision that is a return to Jim Crow.
So I think they're against the decision.
I think you're right, and they very much echo what we heard from the dissent that was written by Justice Kagan and joined by Justices Sotomayor and Jackson, saying this is devastating. I mean, they went so far as to say this is a situation that will mean we're going to lose minority representation in government. But there are a lot of assumptions in there. It's just like, you know, so many of the things that we saw passed with respect to voting laws in Georgia and other places where the very absolute worst was predicted. And what did you have? You had better turnout than you've had in the past. You had robust turnout across all kinds of different race and nationality backgrounds. So we'll have to see. I mean, the predictions are dire, but we'll only know when these things actually start to play out. And the fact is, if you have an intentional showing of race discrimination, that is illegal, and that can still be challenged. And Justice Alito used a lot of language saying you've got to really be talking about intentional discrimination. It can't just be there's some result. We think that's what it is. But also, these people making these arguments are assuming that people vote monolithically by their race. And we saw in 24, there was a lot of crossover. There were a lot of interesting coalitions. And I think a lot of groups are insulted to think that the left says to them that Hispanic voters only vote a certain way, Black voters only vote a certain way. I don't think you can make those assumptions anymore.
I hear you. Who's kind of come on your show on Sunday?
We've got Justice Neil Gorsuch with us this weekend. He's got a new book out. We'll talk about the 250th birthday of America and the role of the court in kind of, you know, protecting the foundations of this country. We've also got DHS Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen with us to talk about the fact that, you know, ICE is still not funded. And how do you make up and rehire for these thousands of employees that you've lost over the 70 plus day shutdown? How much danger are we in? I mean, are you able to track people like Cole Allen? How can you do that when you've lost so many people at DHS?
It's going to be a great show.
It's just the appetizer for Sunday night.
I don't look at it that way. I look at a network show as something to build a life around. You going to accept that?
I will, but I feel like we're complimentary. Like maybe I'm the first course, you're the second course, or do you want to be the dessert? I don't know.
I'll be the beer at the end of the night. I'll be the nightcap.
We'll drink to that.
The shot of Bailey's on the rocks. That'll be at 10, but
I
you
do
all
like
day.
That for a little night, a little nightcap.
Well, a lot of sugar, but it's a commitment, and I do like the taste, and it's not really from Ireland.
And it will fuel your dancing, which is going to take part on One Nation.
Need a bottle of Dailies to get to get me to dance.
I'm sending it right over.
All right. Go get them, Shannon. Watch Fox News Sunday. Don't move.
From breaking news to big name guests, Brian brings you insight you won't hear anywhere else. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
He's not going to make a bad deal himself. So we have a stalemate here. They own the Straits of Hormuz, and we have shut down all their exports with the blockade. So we could continue that, and because the blockade is definitely effective. And we can make a huge list of everything that's happening to the Iranians in terms of the economic peril and the suffering that's about to take place.
That is General Keane, and they are really under strict sanctions. And we have shut off the Strait of Hormuz, and they have nowhere to put their oil. We're even stopping Chinese ships from going in and going out. At the same time, the leaders don't care, and they're so fractured, and they've been so – the whole top 1.5 layers have been scraped off. Yet we have people here like Thomas Friedman in the New York Times saying that we're losing. We have every Democratic lawmaker saying that we are out of cards. We have lawmakers saying that we're doing an illegal war. We have allies saying the same thing. I would say that all those people complaining, you're not looking at the battlefield. You're not dealing with reality. If you said you can't see it, that Tehran has shut everything off, you have no internet, people can't contribute, I get that. But to make opinions of stuff you don't know or hoping that we fail, hold on, because your comments are not going to age well. I guarantee it. Hey, coming up Sunday at 10 o'clock, got a big One Nation show, but also I got some tour dates to go over. Reno, Nevada, May 30th, History, Liberty, and Laughs. Streams on Fox Nation. It's going to be on May 30th. July 11th, Pensacola, Florida, selling like crazy in the Sanger Theater. And then in the fall, Uniting the States, my book comes out that you're going to love, The Six Moments That Forged the American Miracle. And you're going to love these six stories, very readable, digestible, understandable, and I'll bring them to life on the United States tour, Red Bank, New Jersey, October 16th. The next day, Westbury, New York. I hope to see all the WABC listeners out there. Clearwater, Florida. We'll have the Ruth Eckerd. We're back there at Clearwater November 7th. The next day in Jacksonville at the Florida Theater. I love that place, right near the revitalized downtown Jacksonville. And then Chesterfield, Missouri. United States tour. It's right outside St. Louis, so that's going to be great. Meanwhile, when we come back, I'll be able to squeeze in some calls before we go, but when we come back, we're going to be joined by Jonathan Albert, a psychotherapist, and author of a brand new book called Therapy Nation, How America Got Hooked on Therapy and Why It's Left Us More Anxious and Divided Than Ever. Man, if that is in fact true, a lot of people are going to want their money back. We'll find out about that and more. You listen to The Brian Kilmeade Show. And when we also keep in mind, too, when we come up on Sunday at 10 o'clock, I'm going to be looking at a few things about China. Number one, should we be meeting with them on May 14th when the president's supposed to go over there, knowing that they are still supplying Iran and they're harassing ships coming out of Panama from Panama because we have taken the contract from them on the Panama Canal? Think about that. Don't move.
You want truth, you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So let's take a break from the breaking news and talk about something that's always in the news, and that is Trump derangement syndrome. It's a real thing. Jonathan Albert wrote about it, and he also has a brand new book. He's a psychotherapist, A Therapy Nation, How America Got Hooked on Therapy and Why It's Left Us More Anxious and Divided. So I thought, when I saw the title, I thought I was looking at a book that talks about how people aren't looking to people are going to therapy too young and trying to identify normal things that life brings and overreacting to it and trying to. So the book is actually a little bit different in that, Jonathan, if you're wrestling with your headsets in a way I've never seen before, the book's a little different in that you see these therapists are almost like the college professors working to push in a political agenda, you're finding out.
Oh, absolutely. There's an agenda, and no longer are grad students learning how to become therapists. They're learning how to become social justice warriors And, you know, that's part of the problem that we're seeing. My profession is just riddled with people who are looking to get out there and get their agenda out there, and they're not really looking to treat mental health disorders like we're supposed to do.
So here is Caroline Leavitt on some of the rhetoric that we're hearing, because you said in therapy they're actually treating TDS.
Well, I think you heard it directly from the president on Saturday night, Aisha, that in his words, we need to recommit ourselves as a country to toning down the rhetoric and to unifying around what makes our country great. That's true of everyone who works in this White House. But as I said, it's also true of everyone who has a voice and a platform across this country, whether you're on television, a podcast host, people listen. And when you have mentally disturbed individuals across the country who are listening to this crazed rhetoric about the president day after day after day, it inspires them to do crazy things.
Now, she's not a therapist. She's a press secretary. Does it sound like something you would say?
No, not at all. I mean, we have such an epidemic in this country. And, you know, my profession really needs to get a hold of it. We have people on mainstream media that are telling people to cut out people if you don't like how they voted. I know people in my profession who refuse to treat someone if they voted for Trump. And imagine someone going into an ER with a medical emergency and the doctor saying, no, I can't treat you. I mean, it's just unimaginable, but it's happening in my profession.
So that is, do you believe that people are getting radicalized by what they hear on television and what they see on social media? And, you know, people say TDS is different, but we heard Bush derangement syndrome. We heard Obama derangement syndrome. We've heard Clinton derangement syndrome. Now it's Trump. So I'm thinking to myself, what's the big difference with this? Is there a difference?
Well, it's been around for a few decades, as you suggested. But the difference is people are actually acting on it now. I've had plenty of patients who disliked Biden or Harris, but never did it rise to the place where they wanted those people killed. You know, they would just express, I don't like them. I don't agree with their policy. I can't stand them. But what we have with some of the radical left is we have people who actually are consumed by Trump. They want him dead. I've even had people who can't take a vacation because they're so consumed by thoughts of Trump.
So what do you say to them?
Well, I give it my best to try to look at things logically, deal with their irrational thinking, challenge them a bit. Some people are open to it. Some people actually improve. Other people end up firing me. They say, you're a Trumper, you're a moderate, I can't deal with you. And they go and find a therapist that aligns with their view.
How much is it? They have an inordinate opinion theory about the role a president plays in their lives. I mean, there's an excellent chance, even though Trump's everywhere and he's on, you could still live your life. You're picking up your kids, you're going to your work. It's not really affecting you substantially. There were a time when I didn't know through my youth who my friend's family voted for. I didn't know who my friends voted for in their 20s and 30s. Now everybody knows who everybody voted for. What happened?
Well, part of it is we have a 24/7 news cycle. We have social media. But the other part is these people are just hyper fixated and hyper focused on Trump, the figure. And frankly, it just takes up way too much space in their head, and they need to focus on other things, whether it's work, family, friends, hobbies, but they don't. And I would suggest that they go and do that. And my opinion is that maybe people on the right, yeah, they might be into politics, but they also value family, their careers, friends, hobbies, much more so than those on the left.
So I want you to give me an example. I mean, I watched some people get so angry about him. Oh, I didn't vote for him. I can't believe he won. I can't believe he did this. I can't believe he's mad at Germany. I can't believe he did this war. All right. But then there's people who, the minute he jumped on the scene, lost their minds. Bruce Springsteen now and Robert De Niro from day one. I can't figure him out. Listen to him.
The bottom line is that I feel betrayed by my country. It doesn't have to be perfect, but it does need to return to the values that gave us our strength and humanity. If you want our leaders to be accountable, if you're devoted to the Constitution and the rule of law, if you want the United States of America to be worthy of your love, be ready to take this to the streets together, and we will take our country back.
What does that mean?
Well, I'd love to know how De Niro's life has been impacted by Trump.
Zero.
I think he has a pretty good career. He's pretty wealthy. I'm not so sure his life has been negatively impacted.
Why is this playing out? Like, why is this?
These people, they love to utilize their platform, whether it's
Springsteen. But he never did before, right? He's 80. He's 80 years old, and he got a Lifetime Achievement Award, didn't even talk about acting. So when you see that, if you were his therapist, what would you say to him?
Well, I would challenge De Niro. I would try to understand, you know, why is this so important to you? Where's some actual evidence of how your life has been impacted or how Trump has, in his mind, ruined this country? And I would challenge him and try to get him to produce some evidence for that. And I think we'd come up empty.
Right. So are you seeing this in one-on-ones?
Oh, absolutely. I would say close to three quarters of my patients, and I see patients from New York to D.C.
Are you worried that a lot of these conversations go from that to, I'm going to be an assassin, like the one we had last Saturday, like the one with crooks on the roof of that building, like the guy that killed Charlie Kirk?
Well, thankfully, I don't see people who get to that level, and I'm able to help them. But I do think generally across our country, it's way too fast to rationalize bad behavior. And, you know, we have people who are endorsing micro-looting. It's okay to go and shoplift. It's justified.
Well, Hassan Piker.
Exactly.
So how do you get that, the resentment? In fact, if we could pull that up, I don't want to kill you. You already pulled up a bunch of stuff. But Hassan Piker coming out talking about why would we not kill a CEO of a healthcare company? After all, they basically passively aggressively killed other people. So listen to this.
Brian Thompson, as the United Healthcare CEO, was engaging in a tremendous amount of social murder, the systematized forms of violence, the structural violence of poverty, the for-profit paywalled system of healthcare in this country, and the consequences of that are tremendous amounts of pain, tremendous amounts of violence, tremendous amounts of deaths. And that was a fascinating story for me, because Americans are very draconian about crime and punishment. They're very black and white on this issue. And yet, because of the pervasive pain that the private healthcare system had created for the average American, I saw so many people immediately understand why this death had taken place.
So Luigi Mangione kills Brian Thompson, the CEO of a healthcare company, and this guy, Hassan Piker, with millions of followers, understands it. What do you say?
Well,
what's his rationale? What would you say?
Yeah, and look how idiotic that thinking is. Because they think healthcare companies kill people, they go and justify killing someone. And I would ask them, well, what changes have occurred since this murder of Brian Thompson? Absolutely none. The only changes that we've seen is better security among CEOs at major companies.
So, but Luigi Mangione, how do you explain the fact that you got two rows of people who are fans of the murderer, who was not famous before, was insignificant, wallowing in Hawaii, trying to find a career, and he becomes an assassin?
Yeah.
By the way, rich family.
A folk hero. And there's even a musical opening here in New York about him. And it just shows you how disturbed much of our country is when they're praising an alleged killer, and that's the person that they worship. So it just shows you how disturbed our country is. And, you know, you have people like AOC, you have people like Cynthia Nixon that justify small crimes. And I would argue that that type of rhetoric out there leads to bigger problems that we're seeing in society.
So James Carville, 110 years old, looks like, yeah, I'm not sure if he's drinking when he does says stuff like this. But here's an example of how he views Trump. Now, let's say he's getting some people are impressionable. They hear that Carville helped Clinton win twice, and they hear this.
I've called Trump the MF word, and I've called him worse than that, and I've called him a sack. I'm going with it. Rod, who is Vance's spiritual mentor, and Tucker Carlson, who is a person of some substance in the Republican Party, have both called Trump the Antichrist. Well, even I haven't gotten there. So please, all of the people that faint in the street about my name calling, understand this. I have not yet referred to Donald John Trump as the Antichrist. All right? Because I think the Antichrist would be smarter than him.
So if I'm listening to that, That is that you're saying I don't hear that when Clinton was in office, Bush was in office. I didn't hear that when Obama was in office.
Yeah, I didn't either. And now you have someone that was deeply aligned with the Democratic Party who's putting this rhetoric out there. And, you know, if he is 80 or 110 years old, the fact that he's so consumed by hatred towards Trump is concerning.
You would think he'd have a perspective. You wouldn't be overreacting like this.
Yeah, you would think so. And one of the things that I try to talk to my patients about when they talk about disappointment that the shooter missed is I urge them to look at history and look at what happens to a country when a leader, whether it's Kirk or president, is assassinated. And they don't understand it. And with someone like Carvel, you would think that he would be able to have that perspective and look at the history of this country. But they don't, because they're so hyper-focused on Trump, the figure, and their hatred for Trump.
His name is Jonathan Alpert. His book is Therapy Nation, How America Got Hooked on Therapy and Why It Left Us More Anxious and Divided. He also wrote a column in the Wall Street Journal, Trump Derangement Syndrome, real with a question mark. And you say it is real.
Well, what I can say is it's not real yet, but as a therapist, some of the symptoms that I'm seeing are deeply concerning. Life. And I even went on to call it the defining pathology of the decade. We have people that are hyper-obsessed with Trump. They're so anxious they can't even take a vacation. They're kept up at night focusing on Trump. They're physically sick because of Trump. To me, that's a real pathology.
And lastly, people in your profession are making it worse. How?
Oh, people in my profession, they refuse to treat someone if they voted for Trump. They're telling people, if you don't like the way someone voted, just cut them out of your life. My profession is part of the problem, and we need to get back to a time where there's unity in this country like we saw after Reagan was shot.
Right. And in politics, dare I say, it kind of against my profession, but politics should matter less in your life.
Oh, I totally agree with you. Friends, family, partners, these should all be more important than politics.
See, I get it. For example, your team wins. You feel the euphoria. Princess Diana dies. You never met her, but you feel the sadness. I understand it. But you look at Trump, he's in at the Villages, and he's signing an investment plan to help people retire, whether it's the Trump accounts or whether it's I'm going to be talking about the LIV Golf Tour. You know, he's on all the time. But your life should not be about him, even if you voted for him. So what is it about? You might not have figured out. What is it about him?
Well, I think part of the problem is Trump was a successful businessman, brash businessman, entertainer, and he was never someone who was supposed to be president. And he came through the system and obliterated the competition. And I think some people just never could accept that and reconcile that. And they still can't. And they just cannot believe that someone like him became president. I've long said that Trump could go on and cure cancer and people would still find a reason to hate him.
Right. And when your book comes out on May 19th, what do you want people to take away from it?
Well, I want people to understand that therapy should actually help you get better. Therapy doesn't need to be a lifelong activity. And also understand that therapy may be hurting you and dividing families, and you need to take a really good look at your therapist and the therapy that you're doing if you're in therapy and the people around you.
And how do you judge if your therapist is working for you? How do you know?
Well, I like to say, like any service provider, whether it's a hairstylist, a fitness trainer, if you're not getting the results, you probably wouldn't stick with those people. The same should be true with a therapist. If you're not feeling better, getting better, gaining insight, you probably should find a new therapist.
Well, find you. Are you a therapist?
I absolutely am a practicing therapist.
All right, find Jonathan Alpert. Congratulations on the book that's coming out in a couple of weeks. It's going to be a big success. Therapy Nation, How America Got Hooked on Therapy and Why It's Left Us More Anxious and Divided, along with a little analysis on Trump Derangement Syndrome. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. From his
his mouth
to your ears.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
Charles's fifth great-grandfather was the King of England during the American Revolution. King George lost his mind during his rule. He was literally insane, which was dramatized in the wonderful 1991 play by the British playwright Alan Bennett titled The Madness of George III. And here we are, 250 years after the madness of King George III helped drive the American colonies into revolution against the crown. And when Charles became the first British king to address the Congress today, he found the madness on this side of the Atlantic.
Really? So Lawrence O'Donnell, a guy you never listened to, thinks he's got a great revelation that Donald Trump is nuts and that the king figured it out. Really? I thought he was charmed. I thought they spent about 18 hours together. And at the end, he asked for a relief on tariffs on certain liquors, and he got it for his country. And I watched them interact. I saw the pictures of them one-on-one. And now Lawrence O'Donnell assumes, after that raucous night with two great speeches, Trump's was great and the King's was great. I know. I wish I was invited to that party, too. But this guy says, let me write a monologue how Trump's nuts and the King knows it. So if I hear that every single day, would I start to hate Trump? If I came in like a blank slate, would I think that this guy is so evil, I got to find some way to stop him if I hear that 24 hours a day? That's what's happening. You know, it's happening. Not a lot. But what really strikes me about these would-be assassins is that they have no history of crime. And a lot of them are highly educated. It's not how I'm used to handling it.